Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Kuf Tes Vav. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins three lines from the top of Daf Kuf Tes Vav. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance at the side in our margin where we have a topic heading which reads Gonav Umochar, a thief stole something, then sold it to a purchaser, the Achaka Hukar Haganov, and then the identity of the thief became known, Lami Poineh HaNignav, unto whom does the victim turn for reparation, LaGanov O LaLokeach, to the thief or to the purchaser. Now the Gemara begins, as we said, three lines from the top, Itmar Ganov, Umochar, V'achaka Hukar Ganov, Rabbi Rav Mishmei de Rav Chiyo, Omar, Hadin Im Horishon, Rabbi Yochanan Mishmei de Rav Yanai, Omar, Hadin Im Hasheni. So we have a machlokis between Rabbi Chiyo and Rabbi Yanai, or if you prefer the later generation, Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, according to Rav, the first opinion, the owner goes to the Rishon, to the Ganav. Rashi on the top line says, Hadinim HaRishon, Dino Shabalabayas Utvi Osoy, the legal matters and his claim of the owner, Al HaGanav, he. It's again, it's opposite the thief. V'en HaLokeach Baal Dino. The purchaser, it has no connection with the owner of the item. V'im bo l'gvoisoi hemenu, if the owner comes to collect from the purchaser, he wants his item back that's currently in the hands of the purchaser, yitain domim, then the owner will have to pay for it. V'afal gav shehukar haganov, even though the identity of the ganov has become revealed, lo amrinon, we do not say yachsir loikeach hakelim bechinom v'yifram min haganov, that he, the purchaser, shall give back the stolen items free for nothing and get payment from the thief. But rather, as we said, according to Rav, the victim, the owner, turns to the thief for all his claims. If he were to turn to the purchaser, he will have to pay to get his item from the purchaser. The next opinion, that is of Rabbi Yochanan, Rashi continues, Hadini Masheni, Dino Shel Balabayas Imalokeahu. He turns with his claim to the purchaser, Vyotzi Imenu Kelov Bechinam, and he extricates his vessels for nothing from the purchaser. Now, as we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice the use of a diamond marking. We've numbered them, so we've numbered up to four of these diamonds. On the side of the Gemara, under our Mivneh, our structural note, four gishos, four approaches, lahasbir divrei Rav Rabbi Yochanan, four approaches to explaining these two opinions. Rav Yosef, Omar Rav Yosef, Velo Pligi. Rav Yosef takes the approach that they're in fact not in disagreement. Kan lefnei Yeush, Hadin im Hasheni, Rabbi Yochanan's point that the thief, the owner of the stolen item turns to the purchaser, that is because the owner has not given up hope. He turns to him because it's before Yeush Bailim. So since the owner hasn't given up hope, and at the point that the purchaser bought it, the purchaser, has to return the item free to the owner. Kan liachar Yeush, Rav's din, that the purchaser is out of the picture as far as the victim is concerned, because before the purchaser got it, the owner had given up hope. And only after the owner had given up hope did the purchaser acquire it. So you have Yeush plus Shinui Rishus. With those two elements in place, the purchaser is considered the legitimate owner of it. Hence, the original owner has no dealing with him. The Travayu, both Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, Islehu de Rav Chisda, accept Rav Chisda's ruling. And we look at Rashi, three lines from the top, the Rav Chisda, who said, Gozav lo nis Yashua by them, if there was a theft and no surrendering of ownership on the part of the owner, in other words, the owner hasn't given up hope yet, Ubo achir v'yochlo, and in the meantime, someone else came and consumed the stolen item, Rotso mize goiver v'chule, and it goes on, Rotso mize goiver, Bereish Pirkin, at the beginning of the parak, we saw Rav Chisda, that when you were dealing with a theft and transfer of ownership before the owner gave up, the original owner can seize collection from either the thief or the purchaser. V'hai nami afagav diyoyev domi laganov, and in this case as well, even though the purchaser paid for the item, legabi hai, regarding the victim, miho gazlon hu, he is however a thief. He's just an extension of the theft, because the original owner hasn't given up hope yet. Umi uhecho delo hukar haganov. If you have a situation that's not what we're discussing right now at the Gemara, but a situation where the thief has not, his identity has not become known yet, so no one would know, the owner would know, and the purchaser would know who to turn to vis-a-vis the actual thief, because his identity hasn't become known. Ovud le Rabbonon, the Rabbonon made an enactment to the benefit of the purchaser. We call that Takona Sashuk, a public enactment. Lito ma shinosan, that when the victim turns to him, the purchaser, to get his item back, the purchaser can demand payment for it. As we said, that's given a case where the identity of the thief has not become known. Avol hecha dehukar haganov, where the thief's identity has become known, olov lahachsir acharov, it's the lokech's obligation to seek him out for his compensation. So the main point that Rav Yosef, the first diamond, is making is that Rav and Rabbi Yochanan are not arguing with each other, given the circumstances that the identity of the ganav is known. The difference between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan is whether or not the original owner has given up hope by the time it reaches the purchaser's hands. Amale Abaye. Abaye introduces a long question, and he asks, "Velo pligi, is it so that Rav and Rabbi Yochanan are not arguing?" Ha matnos kahuna. The term matnos kahuna here is a reference to the different parts of a non-sanctified animal, a chulin animal, a mundane animal that when slaughtered, those parts are given to a kohen. In Hebrew, we refer to them as zroa, lochayai, vakeva, the forearm, cheek, and stomach of the slaughtered animal. That, as we said, are matnas kahuna. They go to the kohanim. Kilifnei yeyush domi. In the following scenario, we're viewing it, and we always view it as lifnei yeyush, namely, the owner of the matnas kahuna essentially are kohanim. The kohanim don't give up hope on getting their matnas kahuna from slaughterings. So the matnas kahuna that we'll speak about in a moment is a situation of lifnei yeyush, before the original owner, the owner being the kohanim, before they give up hope. Upligi, and you will see that Rav, his opinion, is at odds with that of Rabbi Yochanan. How did Rav Yosef explain Rabbi Yochanan that said, Hadini Masheni? that the original owner can take away for nothing from the purchaser, Rabbi Yochanan explained that that original owner goes to purchaser because it's lifnei yeush. In this halacha, Rav will speak up, and it will turn out that according to Rav, even before yeush, the din of is with the rishon, with the thief, and that shows you that Rav holds hadin im horishon, even lifnei yeush. And that is not what Rav Yosef has said, because Rav Yosef said that Rav's entire din of hadin im horishon is when the purchaser got it la'achar yeush. And in this question, Rav will be showing you that hadin im horishon exists even lifnei yeush. Now, what's the case? Disnan. Omar loy mechor li me'eha shalpora. A purchaser goes to a butcher and he says, sell me the innards of a cow. V'hoyu bohen matonis, and amongst the innards, various organs, there is keva. Keva is, as we mentioned in passing, is part of the matnas kahuna, the stomach of the animal. In this particular scenario, we have to speak about a thief. The thief will be the tabach. He's the butcher who's to give the matnas kahuna to the kohanim, the owner. And what happens here? A customer comes in requesting a purchase of innards. Amongst them were keva, noisnon, lakayin v'eino menakeloi min adomim. The purchaser must give the keva to the kayin, and he cannot expect any discount for having to part with the keva. That idea of not being able to expect any discount is mistoma. It's most likely that he didn't pay for the keva in the purchase. However, if he bought the innards by weight per pound, so he gives the keva to the kohen and can expect a discount from the butcher for having paid for something that he wasn't going to get, wasn't allowed to get anyway, and wasn't able to keep. The Omar Rav, and we focus on Rav, that's why we have his name dashed underlined. Lo shonu elo sheshokal li'atzmoi. This din that we learned is only if the purchaser weighed it for himself. Self-service, we'll call that. Avol shokal loy hatabach. If the butcher weighed it out, he did the, we'll call it the physical sale by weighing it out and giving it to the purchaser, that makes the butcher a thief. And Rav rules, hadin im hatabach. What do we see from here? That according to Rav, even before yeush, because here we're talking about matnas kahuna, there's no yeush. Hadinim atabuch means that's he's the thief, the hadinim orishon, and that's not like Rav Chisda. Bear in mind, Rav Yosef said everyone holds like Rav Chisda that before yeush, rotza mizeh goive, rotza mizeh goive. Here you see, not so. Let us take a look in the Rashi. Hadin imha tabuch. We look at Rashi about 5 lines up from here or so in the Rashi commentary. Dino shokohen viruroi ala tabuchu. If the tabuch weighed out the organ meat, the kohen goes to the tabuch. Rav Lekamei, this is Rav, consistent with his opinion, the Omar Adinim Orishon, the Tabuch Keganav Rishon, the Lokeach Avisheni, the Tabuch has the status of the original thief, the Lokeach is called the Sheni, the Komar Adinim Atabuch, and Rav says that the legal case is against the thief. Amo Rav Les Leder Rav Chista. So you see that Rav does not hold like Rav Chista, who said that if it's Lefnei Yeush, Rotsam Yiseh Goyve, not so. So here we answer on behalf of Rav Yosef, Emo Af Din Imatabuch. The Kohen goes even to the Tabuch. Like Rav Chista said, certainly the Kohen can go to the purchaser. It's before Yeush, isn't it? And the Kohen can go to the Tabuch as well, which we called Rotsam Yiseh Goyve, like Rav Chista. What's the point of telling me this? Mahu de Tema, I might have thought without this, Matnes Kahuna Einon Nigzolois, that the Kohen gifts aren't subject to theft. The Svara found in Rashi is that since you're dealing with an entitlement to Kohanim that comes from on high, from the Torah, that wherever it is, it belongs to the Kohen. And that if you have a purchaser, that means that the Kohen has to go specifically to the purchaser. Komash Molon, what Rav is revealing to us through the explanation of Rav Yosef, that he is not limited to going to the purchaser, but he has the option of going to the Kohen as well. Ula Abaye, Domar Pliki. Now, we have Abaye here as a second time, and he gives us his take on Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. According to Abaye, that Rav and Rabbi Yochanan argue, Bemai Pligi, what is their point of contention? Answer, Bidur Rav Chista. Do you accept Rav Chista? Given, as we said, given a case of pre-Yeush, the idea of introducing Lachar Yeush was something Rav Yosef did. Abaye holds, and you can see from his question, that even Lifnei Yeush, there is a machlokes between Rav and Rav Yochanan. What is the point of difference? The point of difference is, do you accept Rav Chista? Rav, who said Hadin Im Harishon, means the victim must go to the thief. And according to Rav Yochanan, you can go to the victim can go to the purchaser as well. Rav Yochanan holding from Rav Chista, Rotsam Yiseh Goyve, Rotsam Yiseh Goyve. Rav Zvid Omar, the third explanation of what difference is there between, or I should say, third approach to Rav and Rav Yochanan. Rav Zvid follows Abaye in the sense that he sees a difference between them. Kegoin shenisyashu habaylim biyad lokeach velo nisyashu biyad ganov. Here there's a question of order of events. Yeush takes place, but after the purchaser acquired it. We've in the past spoken many times about Yeush and Shinui Rishus, the order being exactly that. While in the possession of the thief, original owner gives up hope, then transfer of domain to a purchaser. What happens when you reverse that order? That's what Rav Zvid is portraying. The owner gave up hope, but after the Shinui Rishus took place. Uvaha Pligi. Mor Sovar, it's the following, Rav Yochanan and Rav disagree. Mor Sovar, Yeush v'acharkach Shinui Rishus, Koni. Shinui Rishus v'acharkach Yeush lo Koni. We speak about the two elements as resulting in acquisition. That's only if it's in a specified order. First the Yeush, first the relinquishing of hope in getting it back on the part of the owner, and then transfer of domain. However, if there is transfer of domain and then relinquishing of hope, that does not acquire. Therefore, the balabayas can go to the sheni. Mor sovar lo shna. Rav holds it makes no difference. The order makes no difference, and the sheni acquires. Therefore, the victim has as his only address the ganav. He cannot demand a free return from the purchaser. There's a Rashi that we'll look at together. Rav Zvid Omar, right across from here, Hecho Delo Yayash Bailim, where the owner didn't give up at all, the Kuli Almo Islahu to Rav Chisda, Vadini Masheni. If the original owner did not give up hope, Rav Zvid says, unlike Abaye, that everyone accepts Rav Chisda. Namely, Rotsamize Goive. What Rashi says here is that Dina Mashe means that the victim can go even to the purchaser because the original owner hasn't given up hope. So, where do you have a situation of disagreement? Where the original owner did give up hope, but only after the transfer of the item. Lo shna, Rashi continues, lo shna, according to Rav, the order of events, the yeush and the shinu rishus, or shinu rishus and then yeush, makes no difference. Dekoni legamri, purchaser acquires entirely. V'afilu bedomi lo mahadilona. Rashi adds something very interesting, and that means, even if the original owner offers money to the purchaser and demands his item in return, the purchaser does not have to cooperate. Even for money, he doesn't have to give it back. We continue in the Gemara. Number 4, Rav Papa Omar. Rav Papa has a totally new approach to the Rav and Rav Yochanan above. Rav Papa says, Beglimo de kuliamo lo pligi. Glimo is the stolen item. Everyone is in agreement. The hodar le more. It goes back to the original owner. And here you can see a disagreement between Rav Papa and Rav Zvid, where Rav Zvid said that it's not for certain that the item is going to go back to the original owner. But as far as Rav Papa is concerned, everyone holds the item is going to go back to the original owner. The machlokis between Rav and Rav Yochanan is there a public enactment for the benefit of purchasers? Before we go on in the Gemara, we look at the Rashi. Rav Papa Amar Li Oilom B'delifnei Yeush Pligi. The machlokis Rav and Rav Yochanan is in fact before Yeush. The owner hasn't given up hope. Utravayu Isud Rav Chisda. And both Rav and Yochanan accept Rav Chisda that before Yeush, the owner can go to the thief or to the purchaser and demand his item in return. Ubiglimo digneva kuliamalo pligi dahodru lamora miad bechinom. And as far as the item stolen, everyone agrees that it will go back to the original owner without paying the purchaser. And the purchaser cannot withhold the item until receiving compensation. Rav's comment above that said Hadini Morishon Lo Bedin Habalabayas Komar. It's no reference, it's not a reference to the original owner, Elo Bedino Shelokeach Komar. Rather, it's a reference to the purchaser. Who does he go to? And now we continue in the Gemara. Rav Mishmei Rav Chiya, notice with our markings we're reflecting or repeating the same marking that we had at the beginning of the Sukya, underlining Rav Mishmei Rav Chiya and then later Rav Yochanan Mishum the Rav Yanai with the little aleph and beis in diamonds. And now, looking at everything from a Papa's vantage point. Rav Mishmei de Rav Chiya Omar, Hadin im Horishon, Dino de Lokeach, the law that affects the purchaser, de Lishkol Zuzi Miganov. After he parted, after the purchaser had to part with the stolen item in favor of the original owner, what about the money that he laid out for that he paid to the thief? So Rav says, Hadin im Horishon, purchaser goes to the Ganav. Velo osu bo takonas hashuk, and there was no market enactment to benefit the purchaser to demand money or pay from the original owner, from the victim. Rabbi Yochanan mishum de Rabbiane Omar hadini masheni dino de lokeach de lishko mibal habayis viosu bo takonas hashuk. That after the purchaser had to part with his item, that was what Rav Papa mentioned, the Lokeach, according to Rav Yochanan, has the benefit of a public enactment enabling him to seek compensation from the original owner. Now, we look together at the Rashi. The Rashi, where we left off, V'lo osu bo takonas hashuk, Al shekanoi lokeach b'shuk b'farhesya, v'lo haven bo shenignav, that which the purchaser bought the item in public, wasn't aware that it was stolen, lo osu bo takonas shishalim lo balabayas moisav. According to Rav, who said adinim orishon, the purchaser has to pursue the thief and has no claims against the original owner. No enactment was made to his benefit. Rabbi Yochanan Sofer Osu Takona, when he the Is Lon de Rav Chisda, granted that we hold from Rav Chisda, Velo Motzi Lokeach Lemeimer Labalabayas La Baal Vorn Didiat, and as a result, the purchaser cannot push off the original owner claiming, I have nothing to do with you. Miu Li Achar Shishalim Hagneva, however, after he pays the theft, meaning he parts with the stolen item that he bought in favor of the original owner, yitba mo'isav mibalabayas, the lokeach can seek compensation, his purchase price, from the original owner. We now turn back to the Gemara with a question. V'sofa rav lo osu bo takonas hashuk? Could it be that Rav is of the opinion that the purchaser does not have the benefit of the public enactment enabling him to receive his purchase price from the victim? The whole Rav Huna, Talmide de Rav Have. We have a little incident where Rav Huna enters the picture. He was a student of Rav, and in saying that, we're assuming that what Rav Huna says reflects Rav's opinion. The Chanan Bisha, Gonav Glimo Vizovna, and Chanan Bisha, that's how he's referred to, which translates as bad Chanan. We saw him way back on Daf Lamed Zayin Omer Aleph, and if you want to appreciate another aspect of his bad qualities, look over there on Lamed Zayin Omer Aleph. This fellow, Chanan Bisha, stole a garment and sold it. Also, Lekame Rav Huna, the victim, came to Rav Huna, Omar Le, Lahu Gavra, and Rav Huna said to the Balabayas, Zil Shori Avitcha, go and redeem your item. That means, pay the purchaser to get your item back. What do we see from here? That there is Takonas Hashuk, the Lokeach is going to get compensation from the original owner. The Gemara answers, Shaini Chonan Bisha, the case of Chonan Bisha is different. Kevon Deleka Lishtalumi Mine, since he has no means of paying, Klo Hukar Haganov Domi. It's like a case of the Ganov's identity not being revealed. In the case of Lo Hukar Haganov, where the Ganov's identity is not known, Rav concedes that the owner will pay the Lokeach to get his item back. Omar Rava, im ganav mefursimhu lo osu bo takonas hashuk. If the thief is famous, is well known, so then the purchaser does not have the benefit of the takonas hashuk. Question: v'ha chana bisho de mefursim have the osu bo takonas hashuk? Chana bisho was known in his evil ways. He was well known, and you see, contrary to Rava's claim that there is takonas hashuk, that the original owner has to pay the purchaser to get his item back. The Gemara says, Nehida mefursim lebishusa, granted he's known as being a lowlife, being a bad guy. However, legnevusa lo mefursim, he's not well known as a thief. If you look back on Daf Lamed Zayin, you'll see another aspect of his negative qualities. And for that he's well known, but not as a thief. So that Rav Huna's ruling that the entitles the purchaser to get compensation doesn't run counter to any of the rules that we know regarding Takonas HaShuk. And the main point to emphasize is that Rav Huna's ruling reflects Rav's opinion that where you have Hukar Haganov, the identity of the thief is revealed, then the lokeach, the purchaser, doesn't have the benefit of takonas hashuk, a special enactment for him to demand payment or expect payment from the owner of the item. Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a nosei topic heading, takonas hashuk. HaGemara mevio kama dugmos lelameid mosai ube'ezin usibos osu takonas hashuk. The Gemara will give us a few cases and examples through which to appreciate and understand when and under what circumstances the takonas hashuk is enacted. The Gemara. Itmar. Gonav upora b'choivoi. Gonav upora b'hekefoi. Lo osu bo takonas hashuk. A thief stole an item, and with the stolen item, he paid off a debt that he had. A thief stole off a stolen item and paid hekefo, he stole credit that had been extended to him. In both of these cases, the thief was using the stolen item to pay a pre-existing debt. The individual who extended the money, the credit to the thief, did so without any awareness of the stolen item, without any anticipation of receiving that particular stolen item as payment. So that now when the owner of the item goes to the, say, the creditor who extended credit to the thief, and insists on getting his item back, we are not going to be looking at that creditor as, in the previous section, we looked at the purchaser. In the case of the purchaser that we had mentioned before, he purchased, he paid money, he laid out money in a purchase for that specific item, the item that had been stolen. In this case, the parties that laid out the money, the lenders, the credit extenders who laid out the money, they did not lay out their money with the stolen item in mind. That being the case, there is no grounds for takonas hashuk to enable the creditors in this case to receive payment from the owner of the stolen item. The Amri, and now the explanation in the Gemara. We say, Lo adaito dehanohu yahivis le midi. It was not on their minds of these different creditors that they gave out, they extended their money with the intention of getting back the stolen items. Mashkanta. Here you have a third scenario. A person stole an item and then used it as collateral in order to get a loan. Within the case of mashkanta, we'll see here different scenarios. Before we go into the scenarios, let's just repeat what we mentioned a moment before. In evaluating whether there's grounds for takanas hashuk, we have to look at the party that extended the money. Did he extend the money in anticipation or with a specific intention of getting that stolen item? So now we're speaking about using the stolen item as collateral. In other words, we're at a point in time before money had been extended. A loan is about to take place. The stolen item is used as collateral. Shavi Moson Bemea, if an item worth 200, this stolen item, was used in order to get a loan, a cash loan of 100, Asu Bo Takonas Hashuk. We say this is grounds for Takonas Hashuk, which means that when the owner of the item takes it from the lender, the owner will have to compensate the lender. Why? The lender extended the loan of 100 because he knew he was getting collateral worth 200. So you can say he extended the loan because of this particular stolen item. Shave b'shave. What about an item worth 100, stolen item worth 100, in order to that was presented to a lender in order to motivate him to give a loan of 100. Before we go on in the Gemara, we drop down to the lower part of the narrow lines of Rashi. Mashkanta shove b'shove. You notice a double star. Maybe you can find the Rashi a little faster that way. Ein derech lasois kein lahavos ala mashkon kol shovyoi. It's not the normal behavior of lenders to extend a loan for which they get collateral that is the same amount, that the entire loan is matched by the value of the mashkon. What is normal is to extend a loan where the value of the mashkon, of the collateral, is worth more than the loan. Hilchoch, being that that's the case, la vadaito tahay mashkanta oisve elohimune hemne, someone who extends a loan anyway, we would say, is extending the loan on faith, on trust, not because of that particular collateral. So now we turn back to the Gemara. What is the din regarding takonas hashuk vis-a-vis a loan given in exchange for collateral worth the same amount as the loan? Ameimar Omar lo asubo takonas hashuk. Ameimar reflects the idea that we saw in Rashi. The loan was given on good faith, not because of that particular mashkon collateral, i.e. stolen item. Marzutra Omar also bo takonas hashuk, and Marzutra says that even there, they did institute takonas hashuk. Zavina, a sale, a fourth case, a fourth scenario, a sale, shove v'shove, also bo takonas hashuk. Here, if the purchase price for the stolen item reflects the actual value of the stolen item, so takonas hashuk was instituted, where the original owner can demand his item back from the purchaser, but the purchaser has a right to receive the payment from the original owner. Shove mea b'moson. What about a case where an item worth 100 was sold for 200? In other words, a person paid twice the amount of the value of the item, the stolen item, in exchange for buying it. Rav Sheshes Omar Lo Asubo Takonas Hashuk. This is almost the inverse case of the Mashkon, where a double amount was paid for it. There's no Takonas Hashuk. And Rashi says, even to get the 100 back, that which reflects the value of the actual value of the item, the purchaser cannot demand that because this was essentially it was given as a gift, just like the original. Let's say we say 200 was paid for an item worth 100. In effect, 200 was given as a gift. And the exchange of the item was also in the context of a gift. So there's no room for Takonas Hashuk. Rashi says, where we left off, Rav Sheshes Omar Lo Asu, Afilu Lito Mea, the purchaser cannot expect even 100 from the original owner. Dechiechi Demeo Yuserin Matonehi, just like the additional 100 that he paid out was really given as a gift. Meo deshav yanami matonahavli. The 100 that reflects the value of item was also given as a gift. Let's turn back to the Gemara. I guess it just goes without saying that the idea of takonas hashuk, an enactment for the public welfare, is so as to ensure that commerce will continue in a smooth fashion without people being suspect of having to part without compensation for purchased items. But where you're dealing with a gift, so that's outside the realm of preserving commerce. We continue in the Gemara, Rava Omar Osu Bo Takonas Hashuk, and Rava goes to the other extreme, that the original owner will have to pay the full 200 to get his item back. The Hilchasa, the Gemara now rules, Bekulhu Osu Bo Takonas Hashuk. With regard to all of the examples we've seen above, there is takonas hashuk. The original owner can demand his item back, but he'll have to pay for it. Labar, with the exception of the first two cases, miganav upara b'chayvay, ganav upara b'hekefo. In those two cases, as we explained earlier, the original money was extended on good faith, not with this particular item in mind. Avimi bar Nazi, Hamua de Ravino, Havimasik Bahugavra Arba Zuzi. Avimi bar Nazi, that's the name of the Hamua, the father-in-law of Ravina. This gentleman, Avimi, was trying to collect a debt. In other words, he had extended a loan to a particular individual of 4 Zuz. Gonav Glimo, the borrower, the loive, stole a garment. Asyo Nihale, and used the garment to pay off the debt. Oisve Arba Zuzi Achrini. Avimi, after having received his loan paid up, he extended another loan to the same individual. Of course, up till this point, Avimi wasn't aware that there was any theft involved. Lesof Hukar Haganov. And then the identity of the theft of the thief became known. In other words, it was revealed that this borrower was a thief. The owner of the glima, of the garment, wanted his garment in return. In the meantime, it's in the possession of Avimi, the lender of the money. Also, lekame de Ravina. The case came to Ravina, Omar, and Ravina ruled. You'll notice we have a geometric form, a volcano shape, that's featured on the side under the Mivne heading, Havlotas Ravina Vekushias Rav Koyen. We have first Ravina, and then you'll see Rav Koyen raises a question, and then we'll have through his question, he represents a different opinion. So now, the case came to Ravina, and he, Omar, and Ravina said, Kamoi, the first four zuz. Gonav upora b'choyvoy. It's the case we had before of a loan having initially been extended without any idea of the how it would be paid back, without any awareness of the item that eventually would be used to pay it back. And as a result, velo boi lemesav le velo midi. The owner can demand his item back and doesn't have to pay the lender anything. That's as far as the first four zuz are concerned. Hanacharbo zuzi achrini, the second loan of four zuz. Now that was extended because the lender, received payment in the form of the glima. That, we'll say, motivated him to extend an additional loan. As a result, shkol zuzach v'hodar glimi, the owner of the glima is entitled to demand his glima. However, he must pay the lender the money, the value of the glima. Maskif lo Rav Koyen. Rav Koyen asks, V'dilma glima behani zuzi kamoi yahavoni halei. The glima, which was used to pay the first loan, the first four zuz, that was gonav upara b'chovo, gonav upara b'hekefo. Those are the cases we alluded to before, that the we saw there that the lender of the money was not entitled to receive compensation once the owner of the item demanded it in return. V'arba zuzi basroi, and the second loan, hemune hemne, ki hechi dehemne meikora, was extended on simple good faith, on trust, just like the first four zuz were extended on good faith. And as a result, the owner can demand his item back, and you, the lender, cannot demand payment whatsoever, not for the first loan, the item that was used to pay off the first loan, which was the stolen glima, nor for the return of the item as a result of the second loan either. No payment is due to the lender from the original owner. Igalgu milsa mota lekame de Rabbi Avo. The case rolled eventually to the door of Rabbi Avo, and Omar, and he ruled hilchaso k'rav koyin. He ruled like Rav Koyin that in this case involving Avimi Nazi, who had extended the loan, eventually having to part with the item that he received in payment of the loan, him not being entitled to receive any compensation from the owner. We have another story here. Before we read the Gemara, let us just point out that there are several individuals involved. They appear named, their name-wise, a reflection of where they came from. So that today you might refer to someone as the New Yorker or the Chicagoan. Here we refer to the Narsha'a and the Papuna'a and the Bar Chozal. So for our purposes, they simply represent three different people. And now the Gemara. Narsha gonav safra. The Narsha stole a scroll. Zavne le papunoa betamnin zuzi. And he sold it to the papunoa for 80 zuz. Zuz being a form of currency, or a denomination of currency. For those who prefer more contemporary forms of currency, you can say $80. We'll stick with zuz, though. Ozal papuna, Papuno, who bought it from the thief for 80. Also, Papuno, Zavne Labar Mechuzo be Meo V'Esrim Zuzi. He, Papuno, then sold it to Bar Mechuzo for 120 Zuz. Bar Mechuzo, again, a person named after his place. I hope you realize then that Papuno just profited 40 Zuz. Lasof Hukar Haganov. And now, and then the identity of the Ganov, namely Narsha, became revealed. What, and then the victim wants his scroll back. Omar Abaye. Notice we have him underlined and calling him one. A few lines later, Rava will appear with his take on it after he raises a question. Omar Abaye. Lazel more de safra, v'yohev lei labar mechuzo tamnin zuzi v'shokil safrei. The owner goes to the final purchaser, the bar mechuzo, give me back my scroll, and the owner pays him 80. Don't forget, bar mechuzo laid out 120 for the item. He gets from the original owner compensation of 80. The Ozel Bar Mechuzo v'Shokil Arboyin mi Papuno. He will then get paid 40 from Papuno. That 40 that Papuno is paying represents the entire profit that Papuno thought he would enjoy from his sale to the Bar Mechuzo. But as you can see, the Bar Mechuzo is fully compensated, just in two parts, 80 from the original owner and 40 from the Papuno. Maskif lo Rava. Rava has a difficulty with this approach. Hashta, mind you, now we know that Lokeach Miganov, Osu Bo Takonas Hashuk, a fellow who purchased directly from the thief, has the benefit of the original owner paying him the entire amount. Even though you can say this guy bought directly from the thief, he's a tainted individual in that sense. Nevertheless, he's entitled to full compensation from the owner of the item. Lokeach mi lokeach mi bayo. A purchaser from a purchaser, he's a more wholesome individual. Certainly, he should be entitled to a full benefit of takonas hashuk. So, mibaya means, do I have to tell you about him being able to benefit from takonas hashuk? And therefore, it's certain, it's clear that the original owner shall pay the lokeach min lokeach, in our case, the bar mechuzo, the full amount. So that the original owner will lay out 120 to pay the bar mechuzo. Elo Omar Rava. Therefore, Rava, after raising the question, introduces his approach. Lezel more de safra v'yoyevle le bar mechuzo meo v'yesrim zuzi v'shokil safre. Let the original owner go to bar mechuzo, pay 120, and get his scroll in return. The lezel more de safra. And now the owner of the scroll, who simply was trying to recover his own lost item, in the meantime laid out 120, let him go v'lishko arboyin mi papuna, let him get 40 from papuna, and v'tamnin mi narsha, and 80 from the thief. We continue now with a new Mishnah. We've seen an allusion to this case, this scenario. We saw this in our previous discussions. Specifically, back on Kuf Yud Dalet Omid Beis, Rabbi Shmuel Benoish, Rabbi Yochanan Broka had commented on this scenario. What's the scenario? So the Mishnah says, Zeh bo b'chavito shel yayin, v'zeh bo b'kadosh shel dvash. One is carrying a vessel containing wine, and the other a vessel containing honey. honey is more valuable than wine, more costly. Nistiko chovis shel dvash, the barrel containing the honey cracked. V'shofach ze es yeno v'hitzilis dvash l'soichoi, the owner of the wine did a kindly act. He spilled out his wine and saved the honey into his solid container. Ein, we continue at the top of Omid Beis. Ein loy elos choroi. The owner of the wine can ask only for schoro. What's schoro? Rashi says schar kli, the value of the container. The container will go now, is going to be given to the owner of the honey, and schar pu'ula, and whatever efforts he invested in doing this, he would get paid the minimum wage for the time he invested in saving the honey. However, as far as getting full compensation for the wine that he spilled out, that not. Ve'im Omar, if the owner of the wine declared, Atzil es shelcho v'ata noisein li domi sheli, I will save yours, namely your honey, and you will pay me for all of my expenses, all, full compensation for the wine, chayov litein lo, then the owner of the honey is obligated to pay. Shotaf nachal chamoroi v'chamor chavero, a river swept away someone's donkey and his friend's donkey. Shelo yofe mone v'shel chavero mosayim, his own is worth 100, his friend's is worth 200. V'iniach ze es sheloi v'hitzil es shel chavero. Ein lo elos choro. The owner of the lesser value donkey abandoned his own and saved the friend's more expensive donkey. All he can demand is his wages. He cannot demand full compensation for his lost donkey. If, however, he announced at the outset, I will save yours and you will compensate me for mine, then the beneficiary has to compensate. As we turn to the Gemara, you will notice triangles that appear quite a way down this omid in alternating directions. We have a structural note which indicates that the triangles are used as a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the back and forth give and take style of the Gemara, with the point facing up kushya, a question, inverted triangle represents tshuva, a response. We have a topic heading where we have written in our margin, Loma b'Mishneh, why in the Mishnah, Hamatzil Dufsho Shel Chaveroi, the individual who saved the honey, Ein Lo Elos Choro, all he can demand is his schar pu'ula, his payment for his efforts. V'loi Zoichem in Hefker, why can't he simply keep the honey as one who acquires from the realm of Hefker? Hefker is that which is unowned. If a barrel of honey develops a crack in it and the honey is going to be a total loss, so one who comes along and saves it is essentially saving something from the realm of the unowned, something that otherwise would have been a total loss. Now the Gemara. We open with a long question. Ve'amai, why in the saving of the honey must the saver return the honey and get only pay for his efforts? Lema le, why should the owner of the wine not be able to say, Mehefkeiro kozochino, I have acquired it, benefited in the honey from the realm of Hefker, and thereby keep all of the honey for himself. Mi lo tanyo, do we not have the following Tanaic source? Hare shoyoton kade yayin v'kade shemen. Someone was carrying barrels, containers of wine, containers of oil. V'ro shein mishtabrois. And he noticed that they were all going to be spilled out. And there was a total loss. Lo yoimar. He shall not say, and here we're dealing with the realm of tithes. He shall not declare the spilling wine and oil. Hareze truma umaiser al peros shiesh li besoch besi. I declare this as the tithe for the produce that I have, the wine and the oil that I have in my home. V'im Omar, and if he were to say such a thing, lo Omar klum, his tithe is of no value, of no consequence. He said nothing. What principle do we see here? We see that something that's spilling out, that's going to a total loss, he's not said to have any possession of it. It's like Hefker. It's not considered his. If it were considered something in which he has possession, so it would have served as his tithing of the produce that remained in his house. But not so. The Gemara responds, Kid Omar Rav Yirmiyah, as Rav Yirmiyah says later on, Kishekel Beisabad Korachaleo, Hochinami, so too regarding the honey in our Mishnah, Kishekel Beisabad Korachaleo. Before we involve ourselves with attempted translation, simply let us note that the case of the honey in the Mishnah was not going to be a total loss. All that would happen is that it left, let's say, unattended, there would be a slow drip from the honey container. That we do not describe as Hefker. What does Rav Yirmiyah refer to when he says Ekel Beis Habad? Ekel Beis Habad is a type of meshwork that's used in the context of pressing olives for olive oil purposes. And this meshwork, in our case, was wrapped around the jug containing the honey. So that even though the jug had developed a crack, the meshwork that enwrapped the honey jug prevented the total loss of the honey. Rather, a slight or a minor drip is all that would have been sustained. So it's not a case of the honey being a total loss, and hence we can't categorize it as something that's unowned, that's Hefker. V'im Omar, lo Omar klum. This is a simple quote from the end of the previous frame source, and the person attempting to declare the total loss wine and oil as tithes for the items that remained in his home, his declaration is valueless, is nothing. Question, V'hotanya, do we not have the following source? Mi shebaba derechu mois biyodo, v'anos kenegdo, person who's on the road, he has money in his hand, and a bandit comes in his direction. Lo yomar, hare peros sheishli besoch beisi mechulolin al moz halalu. Peros, the meiser sheni produce that I have in my house. Meiser sheni is the tithe that a person separates 10% of his produce on the first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the 7-year sabbatical cycle. Those fruits are expected to be brought to Jerusalem and consumed therein by the owner, and if not, the owner would transfer the sanctity of that tithe, the Maaser Sheni tithe, onto money. In this case, we have, and of course that money would be brought to Jerusalem, spent therein for food, in fulfillment of the rules of Maaser Sheni. Here we have this traveler. He's about to lose his money to some bandit. We say that the traveler shall not declare the Maaser Sheni produce in his house as redeemed upon these monies. These monies are going to be a loss for him. V'im omar dvarov kayomin. Now notice we've dashed, underline, what the phrase that stands in contrast to what we dashed, underline, just a couple lines above. We mentioned before that if he made this, let's say, problematic tithe declaration, lo omar klum, here we have a similar situation of a tithe type declaration, and his words are sustained. The Gemara responds why this is different. Hacha b'mayaskinon, here that we say dvorav kayomin, we are speaking about b'shiyachol lahatzil. He has the means of saving it from the theft. So his declaration is legitimate. Believe b'shiyachol lahatzil, if he can save the money from theft, l'chadchila amay lo yomar, so why shall he not, as a first choice, make his declaration as redemption remarks, as a first choice? Why does the source say that lo yomar, he should not say thusly? Why not? Answer, b'shiyachol lahatzil yedei adchak. We said he can save the money, but only with great difficulty. So don't, as a first choice, use those monies as the runnies for redeeming your Maaser Sheni. Question, again, a long question. And where there is loss, l'chadchila lo yomar, do we still say that as a first choice you cannot make such a declaration? V'ha tanya, hare shohoyu lo a levi. He, when receiving his Maaser Rishon tithe, must tithe from his gift 10%, we call that Trumas Maaser, and give that to a Kohen. So a Levi had Eser Chovios Shel Tevel Tomei, 10 barrels of untithed Maaser Rishon that was defiled. V'ro achas mehen shenishbura oish nizgalsa. And he sees one of these barrels that's cracked or been left exposed. Nizgalsa means exposed. Wine that's left exposed comes under the suspicion of having been consumed or diminished by a venomous creature, a venomous snake, and hence you cannot drink from it. So this Levi had 10 barrels of untithed wine, and he saw one of them was either cracked or exposed. Omer, he says, Hare hi trumas maaser al teisha chavroiseha, that one barrel shall be the trumas maaser tithe on the 9 others. Ubashemen lo yase kain, but ne hefsid kain. With regard to oil, he shall not make such a declaration because of the loss to the kain. The oil, we'll see more about this as we go on in the Gemara, but the oil is different in the sense that it's something that would be used as a fuel. If it wouldn't have been tomei, so the kohen would be able to consume it, to eat it. The contrast between the case of the cracked barrel of oil versus the cracked barrel of wine is that the oil, even though it's tome, it's defiled, the Kohen is entitled to use it as fuel. So that if you're going to declare the cracked barrel as the tithe, the Kohen is going to end up getting nothing. Whereas if he would have declared one of the other whole barrels as the tithe, the Kohen would have been able to use it for fuel purposes. That is not the case with wine that became defiled. Whether it's a cracked barrel or one of the whole barrels of wine that had become defiled and then declared as the tithe, in neither situation, whether it's the whole barrel or the cracked barrel, would the Kohen have been able to benefit anyway. So in the case of the cracked barrel of defiled wine, that can be declared as the Trumas Meiser to exempt the nine other barrels from their need for Hafrosha. They will become then Chulin Temeim. Whereas in the case of the oil, the owner is not to declare the cracked barrel of oil that's Tomei as the Trumas Meiser tithe, because in doing so, he is causing a loss to the Kohen. For had he used one of the whole barrels as the Trumas Meiser tithe, even though it was defiled oil, the Kohen would have been able to use it as fuel. Well, what's our question then? We see here that even though there is total loss, the tithe declaration can be made. That's contrary to what we had said before. The Gemara answers, Omer of Yirmiyah, and here we have the quote from the source where Rav Yirmiyah speaks that we had alluded to earlier. The case here is Kishe'ekel Beis Habad Koruch Oleho. The meshwork that we described before is wrapped around the barrel. Therefore, it's not a total loss. It's not a major loss. So what we're saying when we say here Bishlamo Shenishbur Chazya, the Ekel Beis Habad is a solution from preventing a total loss in the case of the cracked barrel. Elonis Galso Lamai Chazya, and we're starting here a long question. If you're dealing with the exposed wine barrel, then is that not a total loss? What value is there in exposed wine? So it would appear that even where there is a total loss, you can make such a declaration. V'chitem ochazia leziluf, you might say, well, even though you can't drink it because of the fear that there is venom in it, but it nevertheless can be used for sprinkling on one's floor, the Gemara speaks from time to time about the use of wine, which was fragrant, as a method of keeping dirt floors from having dust rise by sprinkling the wine on the dirt floor, keeping the dust from rising, and also giving a good, a pleasant fragrance to the room. So that's an alternative use for wine, though you can't drink from it because of the fear of the venom, but maybe you would be able to use it for zinuf. V'hotanya, but that's not so. We have the following source, Mayim shenizgalu, harei ze lo yishpachem b'rishus harabim, water that was left exposed with the same fear of the venom having been deposited in it because of the venomous creature having drunk from it. So don't spill it in a public domain. Don't use it for making cement or mortar. V'lo yirbatz bohen es habayis. And this we've dashed, underlined. This is the main point in quoting this source. Don't use it for sprinkling on the floor of houses. V'lo yashke mehen es behemto v'lo behemas chavera. Don't use it as a beverage, as a drink for your animal, nor your friend's animal. We're avoiding explaining each one of these points in detail. Suffice it to say that when the beverage is left exposed, it's a total loss. It's not fit even for ziluf. So that you see from here that even in a case of a hefsid, a total loss, you can still make the tithe declaration. The Gemara responds, even in the case of giloy, it's not a total loss. It's only a partial loss. The Ovar lo b'mesanenes k'Rabbi Nechemya. You would take the exposed beverage and pour it through a strainer in accordance with Rabbi Nechemya. Tisanyo mesanenes yesh bo mishum giloy. The first opinion says that though the venom is poured through a strainer, it nevertheless does not solve the problem of gilui. Omar Rabbi Nechemya Imosai, when do you say that the mesanenes doesn't solve the problem? Bizman shehatachtoina megula. That's when the receiving vessel, you're pouring from an upper vessel that has the exposed beverage through a strainer into a lower receiving vessel. So Rabbi Nechemya explains that the problem remains if the bottom vessel is itself megula, is itself left exposed. Avol bezman she'atachtoina mechuse, when the lower vessel is completely covered, afal pi she'alyoina megula, even though the upper vessel is exposed, ein bo mishum giloy, there's no problem of giloy. Now the lower vessel is totally covered. It's totally covered with a strainer. Nothing of the lower vessel is left open. You're pouring from an upper vessel that was left exposed through the strainer. The beverage received in the lower vessel is okay. There's no problem of gilui. Lefish eres nochos, eres shel nochos, the venom of the snake, doime lisfoig, is similar to a sponge, v'tsof v'oimed bimakomo, and it floats on top where it is caught. So that according to Rabbi Nechemya, the Mesanenes method can solve the problem of the venom as well. Question. Lav itmar alo omar Rav Simon Rav Shuben Levi. Was it not said by Rav Shuben Levi, loy shanu elo shelo torkoi? The option of relying on Mesanenes, the strainer, is provided that you didn't shake the vessel that contained the exposed beverage. Avol torkoi osur. But if you shook the upper vessel, and the thinking right now is that while in pouring from the upper vessel into the lower vessel, it's going to be subjected to this problem of torko, of having been jolted or shaken, and then the venom will penetrate the strainer. The Gemara answers, Hosom Nami. In that case as well, where you're pouring from an upper vessel through a strainer, efsher de monach midi apuma de chavita veshofi lei. Rashi explains de monach midi. Rashi, you'll notice across from here, a line or two down, he says you place something upon the vessel, beged o shule kvora al pi chavis. You place a garment or the bottom of a strainer at the mouth of the barrel from which you're pouring the exposed wine. V'shofi lei u'misaneno benachas. You pour it out gradually, so that my understanding is that the fabric that you put at the over this spout of the upper vessel or the edge of the upper vessel will prevent, not that it serves as a strainer, but it serves to restrain an intense flow, which would have been the problem of torque that we mentioned. So there is a solution for that problem, and hence we can rely on the strainer to save the wine from being a total loss. The wine that was exposed to Ghibli, the exposed wine. The Gemara continues with a question. The Rebbe Nechemya. The arrow that you see here can be aligned with the arrow further up on the page. At this point, we've said that the source above that spoke about the Nisgalsa is in accordance with Rebbe Nechemya. And that enabled us to explain how the owner of the 10 barrels can declare either the cracked one or the exposed one as a tithe. So now, we ask for Rebbe Nechemya, if that source above is Rebbe Nechemya, mi tarminon, since when can you make a declaration of a barrel that has been defiled to tithe the rest of the barrels that have been defiled? V'hatanya, we have the following source. Tarmin min hatome ala tome, u'min hator ala tor. The first opinion says that when the tithe and the items benefiting from the tithe, that in other words, the items that will be tithed as a result, are of the same status, they're both tome, or they're both tohor, you can do such a tithing. U'min hator ala tome. And likewise, if you're going to separate something that is undefiled to exempt items that have been defiled, that's also legitimate. Avalo min hatomei ala tor, but not to give to the Kohen that which is defiled as a means of exempting that which is undefiled. Rabbi Nechemya Omer, af min hatomei ala tomei lo hitiru litrom, ela b'shel d'mai. Notice Rabbi Nechemya is a stringent opinion. It says even from tomei on tomei, to tie something that's been defiled to exempt other barrels that have been defiled, they do not allow for that, except for the case of demai. Demai is a situation where the barrels needing tithing were purchased from an amoretz. An amoretz, a person who is viewed as ignorant. There's a rabbinic requirement to tithe from that which you purchase from him, even though the majority of Amoratzim do tithe. There's a rabbinic stringency requiring you who acquired from the Amoratz to, we'll say, re-tithe. I say re-tithe in the sense that the majority of Ame Haaretz already tithed. But if it's not a case of demai, then you cannot tithe from tome on tome. So how can we say that the source above involving the Eser Chovios, the 10 barrels, where they had all become tome, you're going to, in effect, being tithing from using one of the defiled barrels to exempt the other defiled barrels? The Gemara answers, Hochonami, here too, in the case of the 10 barrels above, Bishel Demai, they were purchased from an Amoretz, and hence it's the requirement, the expectation of tithing is only a rabbinic stringency. So even Rabbi Nechemya would be makil and allow that kind of tithing of Tomei for Tomei. Omar Mor, we have a double star which you can align with that marking above to see where this quote comes from. Ubeshemen lo yase kein mitnei hefsid kayin. The declaration of a cracked barrel of defiled oil as trumas meiser, that one shall not do because you're causing a loss to the kayin. What do we mean by the loss to the kayin? if the Levi would have tithed from a whole barrel, true, it's defiled oil. He can't eat from it, as we explained earlier, but he can use it for fuel. Now that you're using a cracked barrel, you're causing a loss to the kohen. It's that much less oil available for the kohen to use as fuel. The Gemara asks, Mishna Shemen, what is different about the oil that we said you're not allowed to tithe the cracked barrel because of the hefsid to the kohen, the loss to the kohen, the roi lahadlik? It was fit for defiled oil is fit to be used as a fuel. Yayin nami roi leziluf, the wine also is fit for sprinkling, as we explained earlier. So it also has a use. Why then, by the wine, did we say you can tithe the cracked wine barrel? Would it not have been a greater benefit to the kohen to give him the whole wine barrel? Why are you allowed to give him the cracked wine barrel? Is there not this loss to the kohen that he's now going to have less wine for ziluf? V'chiteima ziluf lav milsahi, and if you might try to say that ziluf is insignificant, and it's therefore not considered a loss to the kohen, giving him the cracked barrel of defiled wine. V'ho amar Shmuel, but Shmuel says, Mishum Rebbe Nechia, in the name of Rebbe Chia, that ziluf is actually something of considerable value. Shoysin milug b'sela, u'mezalfin milug b'shtayim. Wine that you want to drink, you would pay a sela, a coin, for a lug of drinking wine, but you would pay two sela for wine that you're going to use for ziluf purposes. So you see that ziluf wine is more valuable than even drinking wine. The Gemara answers that in the case above with the 10 chavios, the reason we were a mekil, we allowed him to use the cracked barrel, is hocha b'may askinon b'chodosh. It's new wine. It's not aged wine. It's not really fit for ziluf, and therefore there's no loss to the kohen in giving him the cracked barrel of new wine. No difference to the kohen whether it was a cracked barrel or a whole barrel. Neither one would have had any use to the kohen. Question, v'horoi liyashno, it might be new now, but he can keep it around and age it, and it'd be fit for the kohen, so is there not a loss to the kohen? The Gemara says, this suggestion of roi liyashno is a non-suggestion, because osi bei lidei takola. In the meantime, leaving around defiled, tithed, defiled wine that was given to the kohen as a tithe, he might end up drinking it in the meantime. Takola literally means a stumbling block. He might end up drinking it in the meantime, which would be sinful. So the example of the new wine from the cracked barrel being used as a tithe to the kohen, since it's new wine, it doesn't represent a loss, and the roi liyashno idea of he'll leave it around to age, that we don't allow because of the takola factor. Well, shemenami osibe lidei takola, you allowed him to receive the cracked barrel of oil, or that you prohibited the tithing of the cracked barrel of oil because of the loss to the kohen, but and because he'll leave the defiled oil around for fuel purposes. So don't give him a cracked barrel, give him a whole barrel. But if you're telling me that the takola is a consideration, so then is that not an issue by the oil that he'll come to eat from it? How in the world can we then envision the oil as being something that represents a loss to the kohen, because he would have been able to get a whole barrel and keep it around, but he wouldn't have been able to keep it around for fuel purposes? Is there not this suspicion that it might come to eat from it? The Gemara answers no. With the case of oil, it remains a real loss. As far as takola, there's no worry about takola de monach bekli mois. He can put it in a literally a disgusting vessel. It means a vessel that once you it's a dirty vessel or it's a has a negative odor to it, you won't come to eat from the wine, from the oil, that is. There's no issue of takola by the oil because monach bekli mos. And as a result of that, the takola issue falls away, and therefore there is a loss to the kohen if you give him the cracked barrel of oil. Well, yayanami monach le bekli mos, by the case of the wine, we can go back to the aging suggestion. Put the wine in a disgusting vessel, and then we do have a loss to the kohen by the wine. Why then is it allowed? Is one allowed to tithe the defiled barrel of wine? The Gemara answers: Hashta lezilof kaboyle. His purpose in keeping the new wine around would be for aging for zilof purposes. Zilof has to do with a pleasant aroma that the wine creates. Would he even think to put it into a disgusting vessel? No, certainly not. So the only option of deriving any benefit from the wine would be for aging the new wine in a clean vessel. But there we won't allow that because of osi ba'be lidei takola. There's no solution for the takola issue by the wine. Therefore, he's not going to keep it around. He'll be prohibited in keeping it around. Therefore, there is no real loss to the kohen in giving him, as a tithe, the cracked barrel of wine. The takola atzmo tanoihi. The issue of prohibiting something on the grounds that you might come to stumble, to sin over it, is itself a tanaic disagreement. Desanya, chovis shel yayin shel truma shenitmes, a barrel of truma wine that became defiled. Beis Shammai oimrim, we continue at the top of Daf Kuf Tes Zayin. Tishofech hakol, it must all be spilled out at once. Ubeis Hillo oimrim taseh ziluf, use it for sprinkling purposes. Omar Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, ani achriya. I will settle this controversy. I will, achrio means weigh, literally means weigh down one side in settling a disagreement. We're going to comment on that a little bit more in a moment, but he introduces his approach to strike a balance, if you will, between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Bevayis tase ziluf, ubasode tishofech hakol. If the wine is in the house, so then use it for ziluf purposes. In the fields, there's no issue of ziluf. So what are you going to have? You have the barrel of defiled wine. You might come to drink from it. So there, tishofech hakol, spill it out entirely. Rashi adds on the top line, basada tishofech hakol, the ademat. The adamamti le lego beisav. By the time you would bring the barrel of wine from the field to the house where you would do ziluf, osi beili de takola, he might come to drink from it. Ika diamri, another approach, is the yoshan aged wine. Tasa ziluf, use it for ziluf purposes. Ubechodesh tishofech hakol. If it's new wine, then spill it out immediately because until it ages. You'll come to drinking from it. We can't take any chances. Omru lo, the rabbi said to Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yossi, we can't accept your ruling, your approach. Ein hachra shlishis machras. What you represent is in effect a third opinion. It does not gain authority as a machria. A machria is an opinion that when you have two opinions and a third spokesman comes along siding with one of the first two opinions, there that opinion would then gain authority because you have a machria, someone who weighs down one side. But you represent a third approach altogether, a new approach. Rashi elaborates on this on the second line from the top. Ein achros shlishis machras. Tam aksmacha ta oimer. You are introducing your own thinking. Velo kedivri echad mehen. You're not reflecting or siding with one of the previous opinions, Beis Hillel or Beis Shammai. Shishneim lo hiskiru bayis v'sodeh. Neither one of them mentioned house or field. So that a distinction between house or field is not something that was of any concern to Beis Hillel or Beis Shammai. Vehefi domi achra, what would be a case of achra? So Rashi explains, kagon, ihavet toni Beis Shammai, if Beis Shammai would have spelled out in his requirement of spill out everything at once, bain nitmeis babayas, bain basodeti shofech hakoil, if Beis Shammai would have made explicit reference to the two locations, both in field and in house, spill it all out. Beis Hillel omrim, bain babayas, bain basodet asezilof, and Beis Hillel in contrast would have mentioned also bias and sodeh, but there you do ziluf. And Rabbi Shmuel Omer, and then Rabbi Shmuel would enter the picture saying nitma basodeh tishofech hakol, if the defiled wine is in the field, spill it all out. But bias tase ziluf, in the house do ziluf. The taimo de travayu komachria, he is in effect serving to weigh down the two previous opinions, Fahavuhu Legabi bias regarding the matter of house. If Rabbi Yishmael had said in house do ziluf, so then you would have Trey, you'd have two opinions. You'd have Beis Hillel and Rabbi Yishmael saying in house do ziluf. Ulegabi sadeh Trey, and regarding the tomei wine in the field, had Beis Shammai spelled out their law of Tishbach HaKol, specifying field and house. Regarding field, you would then have two opinions saying, spill it out. That of Rabbi Shmuel, that of Beis Shammai. V'hilchasa ketrei, and in a case like that, we would follow the method approved by the two opinions. Shein oimdin divrei yochid b'mokam shnayim. The opinion, the minor, the individual opinion, would not stand up against two. The achrei rabin lahatos ksiv. We follow the opinion of the majority. But Kiahu de Kuli Matlonis Mamalikin, it's a parallel situation in Maseches Shabbos. Avol Hocha, but here the Inu Lo Golu Datayu, the Leve Shum Midi Chiluk Bein Bayis Lesodeh. The opinions of Beis Shammai Yisrael did not make any reference to a specific reference to house or field. So as far as our approach to them, they don't see any distinction between house and field. They didn't even hint to such a distinction. And therefore, taima d'nafshei komar, you, Rabbi Shmuel, are coming in with a new idea, namely that there is a distinction to be made between house and field. And therefore, you don't represent what we call the machria, the opinion that weighs down in favor of one of the two previous opinions. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.